If you, your wife, girlfriend, mum, aunt, sister or daughter works full-time, would you want her to earn $25,000 a year less than a male colleague doing roughly the same job? That 25 grand figure is the average pay gap between men and women who are working full-time in Australia, and it's actually improved on last year, but not by much. That number is contained in the Workplace Gender Equality Agency's annual scorecard published today, and its director is Libby Lyons. Libby Lyons, welcome to AM. I know that you like to look to the positives, but based on the rate of progress so far, how many years is it going to take to close the pay gap?
Sabra, if I knew the answer to that question, I think I'd be just about up for a Nobel Peace Prize. I don't know. What I can tell you, though, is based on our data, Bankwest Curtin Economic Centre last year did a study and a deep dive into the data that told us that it would be in excess of 80 years before we have gender balance at CEO level.
And is that a good indication for average full-time earnings for women?
Well, I have to say that I think that I was very disappointed this year with the data overall. To see the pay gap only decline by 0.5 of a percentage point is very disappointing. I think the message here is that employers have to keep their foot on the pedal.
Okay, we'll get to that in a tick. Why is the 20% gap tolerated, do you think? The Matildas last week managed to secure equal pay. Why can't every woman have that?
Look, equal pay is actually the legal right of every woman. So when we're talking about the gender pay gap, we're not actually talking about equal pay. The gender pay gap is an average between the average earnings of men compared to the average earnings of women, and then expressed as a percentage. And it takes into account things like that there are more male managers in employment, the fact that women tend to be in the lower paid, lower value jobs across our country. That's why I say that it's about employers taking action to address gender equality more broadly.
You also talk about board responsibility there, but I mean, that's one of the key points here. The numbers of men on those boards, well, that's not changing either. There's no incentive for them to change, and progress seems to be at a glacial pace. And as you just pointed out, for women in industries that are heavily female dominated, nothing is changing.
No, and that's why I say I'm very disappointed with the data this year, and I think that boards have been terribly inactive. One of the problems, I think, with board appointments is there's a lack of transparency about how they appoint their directors. Too often, male colleagues are just tapped on the shoulder and slotted into board roles. We've got to change this whole culture around how we appoint boards and how boards work.
Well, why not, given those particular things, little progress in boosting women's numbers as CEOs and board positions, when it comes to ASX-listed companies and boards, why shouldn't superannuation companies use their financial heft and force change by threatening to take their money elsewhere?
Well, I think that, that's a very valid point. The fact is, I think that shareholders, superannuation companies should start putting their money where their mouth is here. And I think that nothing hurts more than when it hits the bottom line and when it hits the hip pocket. So money talks.
More businesses are measuring the pay gaps, but your scorecard shows that still 40% of employers do absolutely nothing about it. Have you spoken to those employers about why and what their excuses are?
The excuses are generally around the fact that they believe that their gender pay gap is in some way, shape or form justified.
And how do they justify that?
Oh, that it's because employers have been there for a long time, and so therefore over that period of time, through incremental increases in salary, they earn more than their new recruits. Justifications like that, to me, that's no justification at all. We have to understand that any new recruits coming in provide just as much value, even more value in lots of cases, than employees that have been there for 20 years. And we have to pay people fairly.
It must be difficult for you to front up and to talk about these figures. There's not much change. You've said it's like putting lipstick on a pig. Tell me why you think that, and what is the good news in this?
Well, there is some good news, and that is the fact that we've seen a huge increase in the number of organisations who now have a policy or strategy in place around domestic violence, which is fantastic. That's risen by 13.3 percentage points, so that we now have 60% of organisations with a policy or strategy in place. We've also seen a big increase of 8.9 percentage points in the number of organisations now offering domestic and family violence paid leave. But in terms of the other data, I am terribly disheartened and disappointed this year. I'm hearing anecdotally from employers that there's a bit of D&I fatigue out there in the workplace. You can't have fatigue around an important business issue such as gender equality. You know, you wouldn't go to the board and say, you know what, I'm a little bit tired with our focus on increasing sales, so this year I'm not really going to do anything about it. I mean, no board would stand for that sort of an attitude around a business issue such as increasing sales. Why on earth people think that they can get away with fatigue around diversity and inclusion is beyond me.
Libby Lyons, thanks for talking to AM this morning.
Thanks, Sabra.
And Libby Lyons is the director of the Workplace Gender Equality Agency.